justice and there is no combating climate change without addressing what has happened to Indigenous communities. That means that there is no fixing our economy without addressing the racial wealth gap. That means that we are not going to transition to renewable energies without also transitioning frontline communities and coal communities into economic opportunity as well. That is what this is about. It is comprehensive. It is thoughtful. It is compassionate. And it is extremely economically strategic as well. Today is also the day that we choose to assert ourselves as a global leader in transitioning to 100% renewable energy and charting that path.
AOC! It is Friday, February 9th, 2018. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. We didn't talk last week. We'll talk about why we didn't talk last week a little bit later on. But today's show, AOC and Ed Markey roll out the Green New Deal resolution. It's the first big, bold initiatives the Democrats have had since, I don't know, since I've been around. It's got many Democrats, environmentalists, activists, and people who want to avoid a dystopian future pretty pumped. Nancy Pelosi message tests the dismissive green dream or whatever talking point. Ugh. AOC does some jujitsu with that message and said, yeah, it is a green dream. And yeah, we can do that. Now the real work begins. Trump does Dr. Seuss during the State of the Union.
If there's going to be peace and legislation, it cannot be war and investigation. There's a rocket in my pocket, he says.
Nancy Pelosi lights up the internet, becoming the queen of condescending applause. And Ryan Grimm reports that less than a month after the 2018 midterms, a top healthcare aide to Nancy Pelosi told executives from Blue Cross Blue Shield not to worry about all these calls for Medicare for All. He assured them that Democratic leadership will side with the insurance companies and campaign against Medicare for All. They actually showed up to that meeting with five areas of message testing to try to argue against Medicare for All, too. They're prepared for that, but whatever. The Supreme Court halts the Louisiana anti-abortion bill. Brett Kavanaugh whines and complains and kicks his feet like a little Brett that he is. And Cory Booker is the latest to announce that he is running for president. Elizabeth Warren is set to officially launch her campaign tomorrow in Lawrence, Massachusetts, site of the Bread and Roses strike. Amy Klobuchar is set to announce whether or not she'll run an event on Sunday in Minneapolis. And she's probably not going to have any staff there with her because apparently she's not treating them too well. And, well, yes, old school Democrats are on pins and needles as to see if Uncle Joe will swoop in and make the Democratic Party neoliberal again. And what the hell, Virginia? Really? One hell of a house cleaning coming up. And Jeff Bezos and the National Enquirer. Yeah, there's lots going on there. Lots going on there. The billionaire and the bastards, I guess, is what we'd have to call that one. Closer to home here in PA, Tom Wolf releases a no-frills budget, you know, yawn. And GOP leadership is eager to work with him on his proposed tax cuts. They're a little pretty giddy in the panties about this one. Dems, well, Dems gonna dem. Tom Wolf releases a minimum wage proposal to raise the wage to $12 an hour and work its way up to $15 by 2024. I mean, 2024. But Pat Harkins, the Dem chair of the House Labor and Industry Committee, wants to find a less ambitious plan. Because why should we set our heights high? Like, come on, the horizon should always be receding, folks. Come on, this gets us too close to actually getting to something livable. Can you freaking believe that? Speaking of raising the wage, House Republicans invited two libertarian economists, right? One who happens to be the dean of the business school at Susquehanna University. He invited them over to speak in front of the Labor and Industry Committee, and they advocated for eliminating the minimum wage because, in part, minimum wage, you know, raising the minimum wage is racist. That's right. It's racist. You have a high minimum wage. It disproportionately affects people of color. So it's racist, I guess. Whatever. And scumbag Dalen Leach sues three Me Too activists for bringing his allegations to light. He's gone as far as sending private investigator to try to harm one of the defendant's living arrangements. And he's going to say, and he said just recently, he's going to give some sort of freaking press conference where he's going to prove as good as math like that these allegations are false. Hey, Dalen, enjoy the trip down. Here it's nice and soft at the bottom of the hole. And Free Will Brewing is hosting a pre-Valentine's beer pairing with Trey Locally Sourced. And that's on Wednesday, February 13th at the Perksy Brewery. It's pretty cool. Five-course beer and food pairing at the heart of the brewery's sour cellar. I'll talk a little about that in the fun half. Sorry, Majority Report. The last call. And tomorrow, Free Will is releasing. It's like, well, it's kind of like a re-release. They did this last year, too. The orange-colored Malcontent. Double IPA with Cara and Cara oranges and milk sugar, which I loved, by the way. I loved the first version. Reminder, tune to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Just read the show live at freespeechtv.org or freespeech.org, or you can tune in to Dish Network, DirecTV, the Free Speech TV app on Roku. Remind you to download Rick's daily podcast wherever you get your podcast. Like, Rick is on 5 days a week, right? And you want to know about the nitty-gritty of everything's going on? Get that podcast. But if we want to keep progressive future in our sights, we're going to need progressive media. You can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. Not ready to become a member? No problem. Just go to ragingchickenpress.org and click the big blue donate button, the right sidebar. So, yes, we're going to have potentially some exciting news and potentially some new folks kind of joining us at Raging Chicken. It's going to become more important than ever that we're going to have the support from our community as we kind of really kind of look forward to the next stage of development, if you will, for Raging Chicken. So, Sean, here we are, man. Missed you last week. You know that I guess the connections were not so great out there in Pittsburgh, so it became a little too difficult to kind of like arrange something in between the beer and the laughs that you're having.
Actually, I was pretty busy the whole time. So I had to drive to Pittsburgh. First time ever staying in Pittsburgh. My opinions have not changed on the city. Philadelphia's way better. Sorry for everyone out there who's from Pittsburgh. There goes half our membership.
Whatever. let's just remind at that point that I'm the Steelers fan here, right? I'm the Pittsburgh fan. I'm the one who likes Pittsburgh. But I'm not saying that as a shot to Philly, right? For me, in my world, like I didn't grow up in Pennsylvania, so I don't have these kind of absolutely ridiculous ways of talking about different parts of the states like Sean does. So anyways, please proceed.
But I had to drive out to Pittsburgh in the height of that snowstorm that we had on Friday.
Yeah, it was the PA Progressive Summit out there, right? They had it.
Yes, the Keystone Progress Summit.
The Keystone Progress Summit. Sorry.
But it was pretty fun. You know, it was white knuckle driving. So the past 2 weeks, I put about $1,000 worth of fixes into my car, and one of the things that I was not able to fix were my windshield sprayers. The jets.
Get out of here.
So they actually had to wait for the parts to come in earlier this week. So like two of the four like nozzles, like the holes were spraying on the two nozzles. So like I was just – and yeah, it was not a fun drive. It was a little intense, but I made it out there, made it back safely, did not get in a crash or anything, spin off the road or crash in a tunnel. But
that's good. All those are good.
Yes. I had some fun. I got really great time to catch up with people. I actually went to a bunch of trainings this year. It seems like they changed it up a bit to where it was.
Dan was talking about that, right? I mean, when Dan Dubé is his?
Yeah.
Yeah, Dubé, right? Just kind of for some reason in my head just went like, wait, is that the right way to pronounce it? Dan Dubé was he was talking about that when he took over the reins of Keystone Progress, wanting to kind of do some things a little bit different. So that's kind of cool to hear. I haven't heard a whole lot of kind of reports back about the summit. So I'm loved, you know, when we get into the PA section today to talk a little bit more about it. But yeah, but you liked it. You actually went to some of the trainings.
Yeah, I went to the trainings all day. Actually, I went to, there was four of them. So I had, enjoyed some time. There was a couple of ones I had to go to. I was obliged to go to for work. No, it was really fun. It was a really good time. We caught up with a bunch of people. I was hanging out with James Sierzanski from PA Student Power Network, and hang out with a bunch of other people. We went into an arcade bar, a BYOB arcade bar in the south side of Pittsburgh, which is pretty interesting.
You mean like arcade is in like arcade machines?
Yeah.
Like video game machines
arcade? Yeah. So you awesome. So it was like $6.50 for an hour to be in there, right? Unlimited gaming. You didn't need any tokens or anything like that. The only things you need tokens for were the games that spit out tickets, like skee ball and stuff like that.
Right, right.
But no, these were like full of pinball machines, air hockey tables, pool tables, you know, like any type of like arcade games that you'll find. It was very retro. It was pretty interesting. And yeah, it was pretty interesting.
Have you ever been the one that there's one that's like, well, it's probably not, it's not like set up like a bar. There's one that's down in Souderton here in PA, not too far from me, that it's kind of like that. You go in, you pay, and it's like all the games are, you play as much as you want for that. Well, I went to a kid's birthday party there once. So, and I was like, you know, there's some of the games when I grew up with, I'm like, this is awesome.
Were you playing them?
Yeah, well, totally. You kidding me?
I was playing some of the pinball machines. I mean, I'm not like a big arcade person. Like, I've never really went to an arcade like that before.
Yeah, yeah.
Or in general.
You grew up during the dark times when the arcades were out of business and everything was going to console stuff. So I feel for you, man. I feel for you.
But it was fun playing the pinball machines.
I love pinball. Love pinball.
Yeah, so.
Well, cool, man. It's been a huge week this week. Well, just at the end of the week, especially. Well, I mean, actually, a whole lot of stuff is going on. But the big news for me, right, that we have been talking about versions of this for a while now and how important this is. But AOC and Ed Markey rolled out the Green New Deal resolution yesterday. And it just it's lighting stuff on fire, I got to say. It's, you know, it's causing all of the, you know, the kind of the right wing, the Koch brother funded people to kind of like, you know, like freak out, like kind of like, you know, all their panties tighten up on them and everything. And they're screaming in their shrieky voices all over the place. It's freaking out some of the Democratic centrists who believe that, you know, all we really need to do is change it and put in our LED light bulbs and everything's just going to be just fine. Just put the blinders on and keep on moving forward. But what this represents, the Green New Deal, is it really is like setting the horizons for something big, and that actually has the possibility of fundamentally transforming our lives. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, we've talked about Naomi Klein's like the Leap Manifesto before, and what they were arguing up there in Canada, and what they put together. This is very similar in its approach, right? And the whole idea is that this is not just about kind of use more solar panels. Right. It's about transforming our economy. Right. It's transforming economic injustice. It's transforming historic wrongs and historic injustices. And it's exciting. Right. And, you know, it's the kind of thing that, like, if you are on the side of like, I don't want a dystopian future, this is kind of for you. Right. If you're on the side of like, I'll be dead by then, so I just want to keep my job, then it's a little bit more problematic.
Yeah, and you know what's actually really fun about this? So I was talking to Kevin Boyle in the House the other day.
And he's a co-sponsor of this thing.
No, Brendan Boyle is. Oh, so Kevin Boyle is the House Committee chair or co-chair in the State House in Pennsylvania. His brother Brendan is the congressman from Northeast Philly.
All these and, boys, I'll tell you.
And so Kevin came up to me, you know, he said that Brendan is co-sponsoring, he's working with AOC and working on the Green New Deal stuff.
Yep.
And he said, here's something I think you'd enjoy. I think he's sort of like telling me this stuff because of my skepticism of Boyle back in 2014 when he was running for Congress initially and the mudslinging we were doing. But, you know, it looks like he's turned out to be pretty good on these issues.
Well, you know, he's stepping up for some things. I mean, you know, again, look, I mean, this is, he's like a really good case here, right, on this stuff. Because we know if you remember stuff on with Brendan Boyle, right? Part of some of the issues that were raised, it had to do with his stance when it came to kind of a women's access, right? To kind of abortion services and his positions on some more kind of socially conservative measures. Right. And those things haven't gone away. Right. So we don't have to have these on off switches that are like good person, bad person. Right. If the idea is that you're going to push people on the bad thing, but here, yes, he deserves props. Right. And look, as given his connections to the like Philadelphia labor movement. Oh, we didn't talk about that in the, we got to talk about Johnny Doc's new home coming up. We got to talk about that. Yeah. No, yeah, exactly. But and some of your history with that too, as well, but, but seriously, right. I mean, you think about this, right. Philadelphia, right, you know, the birthplace of the Constitution, right, the one that is the, you know, so much going back to the whole history of this country, and a kind of old economy city, right, in many ways. Now, we got to say that Philadelphia has done all sorts of really amazing initiatives, right, whether you're talking about the Eagles Stadium, when we were talking about initiatives to do little things like painting buildings, roofs white, like downtown, as a way of kind of reducing the carbon imprint. So Philadelphia has been kind of pretty remarkable in what it's been able to do for a kind of old economy city. But for Brendan Boyle and his kind of connection with the labor in Philadelphia to kind of get kind of involved with this, especially given the fact that this whole proposal is set out to very much have labor as part of this, right? As to bring labor into this when we're thinking about the specifics of building this stuff out. And it actually, there's a specific call in the Green New Deal and the resolution, right, that this will bring about, you know, that when they're rebuilding this infrastructure, they're going to be rebuilding it with kind of like living wage union jobs, right? That is an explicit call in this, right? So in the past, when you have environmental concerns that are brought up, as you know, you get labor gets pitted up against environmental concerns. Here, this is brought together, right? There's an explicit call for labor protections, right? And to have the kind of union jobs are what is going to drive the building out of the infrastructure. So it's politically smart for Brendan Boyle too, as well.
And he's also part of the blue collar. He is the head of the Blue Collar Caucus.
Exactly.
Which is a progressive union, pro-union, very progressive economic caucus of the Democratic Party.
It's something, I'm telling you.
And one of the things I think like we need to start talking about, especially the Green New Deal, we don't really talk about, is that like, it's like, I mean, we talk about this like as progressives and wonks and stuff like that. But the idea that like you can like fundamentally change climate change by like replacing your light bulbs is just absolute bullshit. It's total. Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, these are things you should be doing. It's better for your energy. It lowers your bills. You know, you get these LED light bulbs. They last for 20 years. They a 9-watt light bulb has the efficiency of like a 60-watt bulb, which is good. But like, it's absolute bullshit that like, you know, you think we could stop climate change by doing that and not taking big measures. And like, that is like the neoliberal economic model of this. If you do this on your own, you can make this huge impact, which is wrong. Like, we shouldn't be producing beef the way we are. Like, that is one of the largest drivers of greenhouse gas emissions. You know, we shouldn't be crisscrossing Pennsylvania with pipeline infrastructure, right? Because jobs and stuff like that. And you know, no, because pipes leak and methane leaks and it's a greenhouse gas. You know, or we shouldn't be retrofitting coal mines or coal plants to make them clean coal, which, you know, it's absolute like bullshit that clean coal is making a comeback in 2019. I mean, right. the science has been proved settled like 10 years ago when I was in college.
Right. Like, exactly.
I mean, like there is no such thing called clean coal. Like,
no, you're right. There is no such thing. There is no such thing as clean coal. I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. And it's, you know, the Green New Deal, it's what it's going to take to actually like combat climate change. It's going to be, you know, we need a societal driven shift to do this. You know, we have an economic system that is, that is driven on consumption, the ever unfettered, unexpanding consumption. It's not just like, consume more, not only like food wise, but also consume more through fossil fuels and energy in order to sustain our society, which is completely unsustainable. Like, that's if right. you look at, you look at like the science behind it. I mean, one of the best things is like the deer on a deserted island. You know, you have a small population of deer. They have an unlimited amount of resources. The deer population explodes. They consume all those resources, and then the population crashes and goes extinct. Like, we are, as a species, the deer on that island, and we are going to be hitting a point pretty soon where we cannot sustain ourselves. And we're going to have a massive, like, you know, as a species, a massive collapse in society, but also a massive collapse in population.
Right. Right.
Exactly. I mean, our carrying capacity is going to plummet at some point. And it's going to plummet through war, through famine, through disease, through natural disasters and stuff like that.
Oh, absolutely. And so, I mean, this is exactly what there's got to be this kind of transformation, and it's not small steps. Now, I don't know. Did you happen to catch AOC on whatever the hell his show is called, Chuck Todd's show the other day?
I saw a couple of clips.
Well, it was really interesting. I it was a very rare opportunity that I will ever have to give Chuck Todd any kind of props whatsoever. This one I will give him, right? he actually did a Meet the Press, I guess is his show, right? He does Meet the Press Daily, whatever. But he did a really fair and kind of engaged interview with AOC on the Green New Deal. And what I mean by that is that if you just compare, the other day you had AOC was interviewed on NPR, right? When NPR was actually the first ones to actually release her, like what the resolution looked like, right? They released it on their website. They did an interview. And Steve Inskeep, right, from NPR's Morning Edition, right? We've talked about him a little bit before, but he's basically has this faux, like, kind of like faux oppositional kind of like false equivalences outrage kind of way of talking, right? So, you know, said, well, the Republicans said that it was going to pay for itself too as well, and that didn't really work out so much well. When it's like kind of to equate like the Republican tax cuts to a kind of massive investments in infrastructure as if these are the same things because there's similar kinds of like linkages there, it's just ridiculous, right? So anyways, but Chuck Todd actually asked questions and allowed AOC to really flesh out what was kind of important about this. And she was just, again, absolutely amazing in terms of how she was approaching the discussion. Because she said, for example, like you were just saying, this whole idea about incrementalism, right? This idea that we see the change out light bulbs, that we need to kind of have some additional thing that we'll eventually get there. That's not where we're at. But what she was able to do in that discussion was Chuck Todd says, well, you know, you've said that this stuff is not enough. Well, people making these personal changes. Well, you know, don't we need to do this? And she was like, you know, without a beat, without missing a beat, she's like, I'm not diminishing those kind of changes. Those are absolutely important. He said, but they're insufficient to get where we need to be, right? According to the world body that says that we've got 12 years left before we get to the point of no return when it comes to catastrophic climate change. And that's exactly what you want to do. You still need to do all these things, right? We still need to make these adjustments, and these adjustments by themselves are good, right? But they're a small g good. In order to get to the point where if the goal is to stop the climate, is the worst of effects of climate change, right, then we have to do something significant and massive. If the goal is just to just reduce carbon emissions by like point whatever 0.00001%, then change your freaking light bulb. But that's the whole idea. The Green New Deal is basically saying we need to do this in order to stop catastrophic climate change and address historic injustices. The idea of changing out your light bulbs by itself and consumer choices by themselves and lifestyle choices by themselves simply are about kind of like slowly having a lower carbon footprint. Those two things are connected, right? And one kind of helps the other, but the one is insufficient, right? The lifestyle choice was ones is insufficient in order to address the climate change issue. So, I mean, all props to AOC, both in what she did on NPR, both in her interview with Chuck Todd, and Ed Markey, too, as well. I mean, he came out and, like, look, he's been someone who's been on this for a while, right? He's been someone who's been kind of an advocate for a while. So it was also good to see him coming on, like, as a senator, right, basically sponsoring it in the Senate and kind of joining forces with AOC and publicly giving her props for the work that she's putting in on this. And kind of pushing it through there. So, again, this is only a resolution. These aren't the specific bills. The specific bills are now is what is going to come forward next. So, what she said great in the – I almost put this in as a clip today at for the beginning of the show. But one of the things that she said to Chuck Todd is like, look, what this is, what this resolution is – because he asked the question. It's a legitimate question. Well, you know, we recognize that you still have – you know, a Republican-dominated Senate. You got Donald Trump as president. And even if the Democrats take the Senate, like getting to the point you get 60 votes for a kind of like an override, that's going to be kind of a heavy lift. So what do you do? And what her argument was like, look, what this is, what this resolution is, this is not the bills. What this is an organizing play. This is an organizing play so that we organize to get all our ducks in a row for 2020. Right. So we aim to try to get that 60 vote threshold. But if not, we're building a kind of movement around these. I'm paraphrasing now, but a movement around these issues that is going to kind of set the agenda. Right. So we increase the majorities in the House. We get the majority in the Senate and then we get a Democrat in the White House and then things that can actually happen. And I'm like, how is it that it's taken this long to get somebody that understands that? But there she is. So
yeah.
Crazy, man. So, you know, I'm going to be we're going to be covering this on kind of a fairly weekly basis to kind of see what developments are, because I think this is important to keep our eyes on. And that's why I want to spend some more time up front on this. But kudos. And here we go. Right. It was so awesome to see the news cycle. And today, when I was listening to NPR this morning, it's still dominating big chunks of the news cycle. Right. So Donald Trump is not like, you know, the machinations of what's happening in the upstairs, downstairs, behind closed doors in the royal palace is not what's dominating the news, but actually something significant in policy where we need to be. So thumbs up. Cool. But meanwhile, did you catch Nancy Pelosi's comments on this?
I did not.
Well, it's interesting. It's like she comes out. I swear to God, it felt like she was message testing. She wanted to get a sense of like, well, like how solid are people actually behind this? So she was asked about it and she said, well, right. She's like, well, I don't know. So like, look, there's going to be lots of different versions of different things. And, you know, I don't know. There's, you know, they're going to call this. I don't know. What is it? The Green Dream or whatever they're going to call it or whatever it's called. I don't even know what it's called. Right. That kind of stuff. And it was taken by many to be very kind of dismissive of the AOC stuff. That didn't last very long because basically more and more Democrats are kind of signing onto this stuff. And I think Pelosi was like, oh, and then she didn't kind of double down on it. And when AOC was asked like multiple times about this and say, well, what did you think of her? You know, many people are saying this was going to be dismissive. She's like, no. It is.
She was probably just putting her finger in there and see which way the wind's blowing on it.
Well, that's what I wonder. I wonder if it was that. But and then AOC was just like, she wasn't taking any bait. She's like, no, it is a green dream and we can do it. Right. And I was thinking like in terms of messaging, I think I really hope the messaging around this when people say, oh, these are a bunch of dreamers. And it's like, yeah, the green dream is a dream just like the American dream is a dream. Right.
It's like the one like quote that's attributed to RFK. You know, you hear it all the time. I dream of things that never were and ask why not.
Yes, exactly.
Like that's like I mean, yeah, like that's the quote he took from someone. But I mean, like during the 1968 campaign. That's probably one of RFK's most iconic quotes.
Yep, exactly.
And that should be like the basis for the Democratic Party.
Yeah,
I dream of things I never were and ask why not.
And we should be using the language of kind of like think about it like this, like the American Green Dream, right? The idea of merging together those two things, right? The aspirational idea about, say, the American Dream and to say that we can have this other future. We can have the future where we're taking care of each other. We the people, right? And we can get back to that. And through a way of kind of radically remaking kind of the way that we kind of do things. Do check it out. We're going to have a link directly to the resolution and to their kind of like the summary report that they released along with it. So it's pretty awesome. You see there. You didn't really watch the State of the Union, right?
No,
yeah.
I did not.
Yeah,
I was listening to music and doing other things.
Doing other things, yeah. You know, again,
cloud of smoke from what I saw.
You didn't really miss anything. It was you know, kind of the show that you would expect. I mean, the biggest takeaway is it was like, one, it's actually, you know, if someone like, you know, pumps Trump like full of enough of whatever, right, he can actually stay on message and read the teleprompter for an entire period. Right. I think what they basically did, they probably told him is like, listen, last time you gave the State of the Union, it came really close to being the longest in history. You can make history here, but you got to stay on message. You got to kind of like read this stuff and you will have the longest one in history. Right. And so, you know, apparently he topped Bill Clinton's long one, whatever. Who the hell knows? But the best line in the middle of it is like randomly out of nowhere. You can see like one of his little kind of political hacks was in there. He says, if there's going to be peace and legislation, there cannot be war and investigation. Like, I'm like, really? Dr. Seuss appears in the middle of his speech? But whatever. So it was what you'd expect. The coolest parts about it is like the Democratic women kind of flipped the script at one point because they all came in. They wore, like, so many of them wore white, right? Just, like in suffragette white, kind of in honor of kind of the suffragettes. And Trump was basically started talking about kind of the advancing of women, right, at one point. And you could see that he was that speech was set up to try to for him to try to take that, like, to take that over. And the Democratic women, all dressed in white, stood up and started applauding loudly like this. Like, basically, like, that's right. Right here. We're here. We are now part of this. Right. And so by the time he got to that message in his own speech where he said he acknowledged that the women, there was more women here, you could see he was kind of a little disoriented. He's like, well, this is not the way this is supposed to be. He even said that. He's like, oh, you weren't supposed to clap for that one part.
It wasn't an applause line.
Right.
And I felt like some of the best things I saw coming out of that was AOC, like with that I don't give a fuck look on her face. Like, yeah, I'm not going to stand up and applaud for you.
Yep. Yep.
When, like, Joe Manchin's, like, standing up with, like, giddy smile on his face, and she's just like, fuck
yeah, she
you.
Was like, yeah, she was like, she had drilling holes in the back of his head when he was standing up, like, in favor of fucking coal or whatever the hell. And then, but I had to, you know, one of the best looks of the night had to be Kamala Harris, right? With this kind of like, she had the, like, most dismissive kind of like, whatever. It was like this great, great look. It's been kind of like floating around. So Kamala Harris was there. And it was interesting to note, too, as well, is that all the people running for president, you know, you have like four women running for president now. They were not dressed in the white. So some sort of, I don't know why that was a decision that people made, but whatever, they made that decision that they can't. People running for president were not dressed in white. So
one of the things I wanted to say, we didn't put in the show notes.
Yeah.
I thought it was like really great when I saw it. It almost gave me a heart attack when I saw it last week. Did you see what Kristen Sinema wore into the Senate last week?
No.
So apparently she was getting shit for wearing like some of her like printed dresses like into the Senate chamber. And so I guess as a big like screw you, she showed up in like thigh-high boots.
Are you serious?
Skirt. Yes, and a skirt, like shorter skirt. And she was casting votes on the Senate floor in the boots, like there were thigh-high boots and like, oh my God, people were just absolutely losing it. I thought it was just like, it's amazing because it's 2019. This is what like, and all the conservative Republican men just like lost their shit. Just something to like look at. I thought it was absolutely amazing.
And she's from Arizona, right? She's the newly elected woman from Arizona, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yep. That's awesome.
Yeah. So you want to see like making a fashion statement like on the Senate floor.
Oh my God. Oh my God. That's funny. Crazy. Okay. So let's see. One of the things I did want to touch on, we can get a little bit in the presidential race, maybe touch on, the stuff with National Enquirer just for the fun of it. But here's another thing I just want to draw people's attention to. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this, but this is, you know, one of the reasons why we have to constantly be vigilant and putting pressure on these folks. Ryan Grimm of The Intercept published this awesome piece, basically about, how Nancy Pelosi's basically her top health advisor is this guy by the name of Wendell Primus. This is about a month after the midterm elections. He was meeting with executives from Blue Cross and Blue Shield. And he was there to basically assure them not to worry about these calls for Medicare for All. That he said, and this is kind of from the article. I just want to read this piece of it. Pelosi advisor Wendell Primus detailed five objections to Medicare for All and said that Democrats would be allies to the insurance industry in the fight against single-payer health care. Primus pitched the insurers on supporting Democrats on efforts to shrink drug prices, specifically by backing the number of measures that the pharmaceutical lobbying is opposing. And then Primus had a slide presentation, and it was attained by The Intercept, and this is what it said. It said it criticized single payer on the basis of, and this was the language they used, the monies are needed for other priorities. That's going to be one line. They're going to pose it on the web. The stakeholders are against, right? Or that it creates winners and losers. And there's going to be implementation challenges, right? So Democrats, Primus said, are united around the concept of universal coverage, but see strengthening of the Affordable Care Act as a means to that end. He made his presentation to the Blue Cross and Blue Shield executives on December 4th and said, and they were like, we don't discuss these private meetings. So this is what's happening behind the scenes. What's important about Ryan Grimm's article here is that the fact that he got hold of the slide presentation, it shows you the messaging that some of these kind of old school Democrats, right, are going to be using. So be wary of it, right, especially as we move forward in the presidential campaign. This is the kind of language that they're going to be signaling, that some candidates are probably going to be signaling to the insurance companies that, don't worry, right, I'm not talking about Medicare for All, but I'm going to try to pull the wool over people's eyes and make it sound
like Sherrod Brown.
Yeah, like Sherrod Brown did.
Which, like, is absolutely just disheartening because...
Yep, I know, because you were a big fan.
Yeah, well, that as we were saying, that's a litmus test for me. And if you're not going to be supporting Medicare for All, then, you know, I'm not going to be voting for anyone in the primary. Because, you know, did you catch AOC on Meet the Press, the clip when she was asked about Sherrod Brown and Elizabeth Warren coming out in a softer stance on the healthcare stuff?
Yep.
And she's like, no, nope, those are non-starters.
Yep.
Like buying Medicaid at 55, nope. Buying it at 45, nope. Non-starters.
Yep.
She's like, we need to fundamentally rethink our system.
Yep. That's the answer.
And she goes, no, that's it. No. And, you know, like, it's like we're going to be making towards tons of advances on Medicare for All. I mean, there's going to be health hearings on this. And frankly, AOC and a lot of other progressive Democrats got, you know, who support Medicare for All, got committee roles on those committee assignments.
Right. Right.
So, I mean, yes, it will be interesting to see how this goes. But I mean, the fact that you're going to have a Medicare for All having committee hearings and actual attention brought, legislative attention and research, is going to be interesting to see how that goes. And to me, that's a first huge step.
Yep.
I mean, it's not going to be the type of thing where it's going to be happening by 2020, but it's going to take years of organizing around to do it.
No, look, what we're going to see, exactly. But what we're going to see here, I think, like, the organizing has been so phenomenal, right? And it just keeps on growing around Medicare for All, that what we're going to see is that these candidates, we're going to see the real pressure upon, I think three things, like, moving forward, right? Is that the Medicare for All is going to be one of these core, like, parts of the campaign and parts of the debates that candidates are going to have answers to, and that there's enough people with eyes on this that are going to be analyzing, like really saying, no, we want unequivocal support for Medicare for All. Right. And that is going to be a make or break for a lot of these candidates. The second one is going to be Green New Deal. Right. And this is what, you know, by rolling that stuff out now, you've already set the terms of the discourse and parts of what moving forward. And so when you start to see some of these candidates equivocate on the Green New Deal, that's going to kind of start going to peel away from there. And the third one is going to be, and it's not as highlighted right now, but is going to be free college tuition. It's like,
yeah.
Those are the three things that we're going to see as going to be key defining characteristics of of this campaign. And I guarantee you that the mainstream media in the questioning of the debates and things like that are going to try to initially avoid doing that. They're going to try to kick back to the old way of doing stuff. But activists are going to make them focus on these issues. So I'm looking forward to it, I have to say.
Yeah.
Cool. So I got to ask a question. So we know that Cory Booker is, you know, he's announced he's running for president. He had a pretty good rollout. Cory Booker, he's this guy. I think he's from New Jersey or something.
He's New Jersey's least worst senator.
Yeah, right. He's a charter school guy, right?
Yeah.
He's the Wall Street finance charter school guy, right?
Yeah.
He's the one that got him mad at Obama for being too hard about Wall Street. That guy.
On Bain Capital.
Yeah. Yeah. Bain Capital. That's right. That's right.
And he like, I think like he showed up. No, wait. No, he didn't go to the LA teacher strike. No, instead he went to a charter school conference to speak there during the middle of the LA teacher strike.
That's right. He did rush into a burning building and save somebody, though.
Yeah, I guess that's a good reason to vote for him.
That's something. Yeah. So, anyways, that's what we got to say on Cory Booker. So
Cory was a good presidential run. Nice seeing you.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think
he gets to Iowa.
Yeah, well, I don't know. So, but here's the thing that surprised me. Okay, so I don't know if you saw this, but there was the Majority Report was reporting from their live, I think it was the AFT conference, like convention or something. And there were kind of people coming in, and it was like really exciting. It was because of the strikes and stuff, you know, the West Virginia strikes and Kentucky and all this stuff. And there were kind of people coming in and out, and they were getting all sorts of responses. And you could hear the people behind. And Cory Booker came in and got all sorts of like cheers and stuff. And even Sam Cedar was kind of taken back a little and kind of surprised and like, huh. I guess Cory Booker's got it. Maybe it wasn't the AFT convention. Maybe it was something else. But it was like he was surprised that there was a constituency for Cory Booker in that way. So we'll see how that plays itself out. I'm with you, though. I don't see him going very far. But we'll see. I think that he might be the backdoor channel for the big dollar donors. And that's what I think that might be the
and he'll just shift it somewhere else after he drops out.
Yeah. So, but I don't know. I mean, I'm just really spitting in the wind at this point, to be honest with you. Tomorrow, Elizabeth Warren's supposed to have her big rollout. We'll see. We'll see where her campaign goes. I think that it's a good opportunity to reboot. I mean, you know, again, so much of the discussion has been about this freaking, you know, whether or not she claimed Indian heritage, right? Like before. And that's going to dog her. I mean, I think her campaign from the beginning, that was a huge, huge mistake of even kind of thinking that going, getting a genetic test to try to kind of like prove this stuff was a good idea. I think that was just a freaking ridiculous idea from the get go, but whatever. And now she's kind of like tied to that. And I think that unfortunately the media is more interested in that than they are in policy. And so we're going to see what happens. And again, AOC had a great answer to this stuff. And she said that, look, Elizabeth Warren is different than what we see happening in Virginia right now, because Elizabeth Warren actually has the opportunity right now to kind of help shape how we talk about these things. Right. As opposed to like, you know,
I made a moonwalk into this one.
Right. Exactly. So it wasn't me like dressed in blackface of the Klan. It was me dressed in blackface doing Michael Jackson. Right. All right, dude, you're done.
Oh, he's a doctor.
Oh, he's a doctor. Yeah. Well, who is this guy?
Oh, he's a doctor.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, like,
oh, he's a doctor.
So I was at the summit, and this was going down while like I still haven't had like time to watch this whole entire thing, but like it really looks like that Northrum hired Dan Leach's spokesperson.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm joking. But
oh,
like,
I was like, wait a minute, you did just
that fell flat.
But look, I mean, seriously, like, I mean, like, literally, in our political context right now, I mean, ridiculous. That might happen.
Yeah, it's pose law. It's so ridiculous of a joke, it might be true. But no, right. I mean, like, so, like, all I remember seeing is like Brett Bantelli's like gift that he made, like with Ralph Northam actually considering doing the moonwalk. And I thought that was a joke. Like I saw it and I didn't think it was real until like other people started tweeting. So like a couple other videos popped up on my feed a couple hours later. I'm like, wait, this actually happened?
Is his wife told him not to?
Like,
but he was like, oh, I bet you I can still do it, you know?
And like, I got to give credit to that journalist for throwing that question out there.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there are probably, like, I think there are only, like, two reporters, like, in the Pennsylvania's capital who I would throw that question out there in, like, a snarky tone.
Yeah.
Like, Mark Scarfolo from the AP and Roxbury from Roxbury News. But, like other than that, like, yeah, like, that would be such an awesome question to ask. Excuse me. Can you still moon?
Right. It was an awesome test of his actual sincerity, too, right? Because, like, you know, for him to say that, if he had responded to that, like, really?
Really? He like Come fucking on. Like he this did like it was like Seinfeld. He did the three quarters turn. Like.
I know. That's what I mean. It's like oh, he's like, oh, just like I did in college. It's like Could you imagine if like his wife had not stopped him? Could you imagine if he actually did it?
Oh,
can
man.
You imagine that? I just like, I was like, oh my God.
Talk about like committing career suicide. Like,
oh my God. Yeah, totally.
Pulling a Bud Dwyer on stage.
Yeah. And you know, like he's that like out of touch that like, you know, he later on, like, you know, after he's like, you know, whatever, sitting, you know, retired in his home, stuff like that, he'd still have like an old tape of him at that press conference doing the moonwalk, and he'd be watching and be like, I think it was pretty good.
And also, like, if we're going to talk about Northam, can we talk about how much of a big fucking piece of shit Terry McAuliffe is for running this asshole?
Yeah, I think we can do that.
Like, I think that just would need to be said.
Yeah, so, let's all remind that Terry McAuliffe, when he starts showing up at the Sunday talk shows and he starts kind of spouting some sort of neoliberal bullshit about how we can't have good things, right? I just remember that Terry McAuliffe, his one of his good things is the blackface dude from Virginia.
Yeah. And then also a bit locally fallout, Ed Gillespie's campaign manager now works for Red Maverick in Harrisburg, which is run by Ray Zaborni. Red Maverick also ran Scott Wagner's media campaign, and Trump put the campaign manager from Ed Gillespie's campaign on blast for not doing the Oppo research to do this. And so now, like, Zaborni, the people who fucked up the Wagner campaign royally, are trying to, like, say, well, it wasn't our responsibility to do the Oppo research. It was the Republican Governors Association to do this.
Oh, man.
So, crazy. Like, it just shows you how people fall upwards in this industry.
Well, but look, I think that part of it, well, I mean, look, I don't know, but just the fact that you have, what was it, the Attorney General who just had to resign too? No, who is it the one who just stepped down because he said, me too on the blackface.
No, he didn't step down. This was the he stepped up.
No.
This was the Republican Senate Majority Leader.
I thought he resigned.
I don't know if he resigned. He edited a yearbook that was like filled with blackface and racist photos in it.
Right. He's the dude that just kind of said, "Look, I did it too," and then he resigned. I thought.
I haven't been watching this.
Well, okay. Yet. All right. So, but my point is like I think that part of the reason why that didn't emerge in Oppo research.
Everyone's doing blackface.
Exactly, right? Is they get all the white guys, Republicans and Democrats, right, are going to go down. But then you got, like, what's his face now? Is it up for, basically looks like he was a freaking sexual predator on top of this, right? The guy,
yeah.
I mean, this is, I'm telling you, the state just needs to hit pause, shut down for a little while, right? Clean the fucking house, right? And let's start again.
Yeah, full stop and like.
Holy shit. I mean, it's like
it makes Pennsylvania what makes what's happening in the Pennsylvania legislature right now look sane.
Yeah, it's kind of like, whoa, like there's a new barometer setting new lows here for like a high stuff in government. But, you know, again, this is the period we're living in. Right. It's like that. Finally, this shit's not going to be tolerated anymore.
Yeah.
Right. And it's going to be painful for a while. Right. That's just how this is going to work. And
man,
moving forward.
Man, there are some stories that I really want to be published happening right here in the Pennsylvania Senate right now.
Like what?
I really can't.
I know you can't say it.
I don't want to get sued. I'll have to tell you off the air because it is like so wild. For those living in Cumberland counties or central Pennsylvania who are politically involved or any of the locals, you absolutely know. You watch Peaky Blinders, right?
I just started, so I'm just very, very early.
You'll see, like, there's this like laundromat in Peaky Blinders, and they have a back room in there. That's really what that's where I'm going to leave it.
All right, I think I have an idea where this is going, but so we'll talk about it off the air. So I don't want to, and I'm going to pause the recording too as well to make sure that doesn't seep out anyplace. I don't want to freaking go to jail, like getting sued for libel and shit. But even though when it all comes out, then you'll see.
yeah, it's going to be we're priming for a few more resignations in the Senate at this point.
Let's stop. All right. awesome. So and the last thing, seriously, the more disgusting as Harrisburg is, I hope it freaking gets completely swept out too. One, it's just like, I'll give my 2 cents on the, National Enquirer and Bezos thing. MSNBC, particularly Rachel Maddow, is, kind of all in on this, thinking that, National Enquirer may basically have violated its non-prosecution agreement with the Mueller investigation by potentially blackmailing Jeff Bezos and kind of threatening him to kind of release embarrassing photos. National Enquirer published text messages between him and his lover. Lauren Sanchez, right, which basically led to the kind of dissolution of his marriage of 25 years, right, which we should just say the National Enquirer, as scummy as the National Enquirer is on this stuff, let's all remember that it's not the National Enquirer that caused the dissolution of his marriage. It's Jeff Bezos fucking around with someone else is what caused the dissolution of his marriage, right? So it wasn't as if the National Enquirer published something that was untrue. Right. It was scandalous. It was scummy, all that other kind of stuff. But let's remember, Jeff Bezos is not like capital G good guy in all this. OK, so then Jeff Bezos launches an investigation of the National Enquirer on how they got a hold of these things. Right. And that's really good questions. Like how those text messages were acquired and how they ended up in the hands of the National Enquirer is really kind of important, especially given the fact that of how the National Enquirer, David Pecker, real name, who's the head of the National Enquirer, and how he assisted the Trump administration, assisted Donald Trump in kind of the last election, right, by basically burying stories, right? This is all tied up in the kind of Michael Cohen stories and all that, blah, blah, blah. So there's real questions about how National Enquirer got that information, and were there any arms of the government, particularly the Trump administration, the people close to Trump that got him this stuff? Those are great questions to answer. However, there's also another scenario where the National Enquirer did what the National Enquirer does, and they did freaking scummy shit. And Jeff Bezos, because he's the richest person on the planet, decided that he wants to put the National Enquirer out of business, so therefore launches his investigation. And National Enquirer basically raises this threat about releasing more stuff because they recognize that Jeff Bezos is going to try to put them out of business. Now, I am just completely operating on conjecture on here, but I'm just reminded of what Peter Thiel did with Gawker. Peter Thiel did this with Gawker by basically financing the Hulk Hogan court case against Gawker, right? And setting it up in a specific way that would basically cause journalists personally to have to declare bankruptcy in some cases, and for the entire publication to go out of business, right? Because Peter Thiel was angry with Gawker for writing about him, right? So let's not move too quickly and assuming that this is kind of like all about the Russia investigation. This might be about billionaires behaving badly too as well. So let's be able to walk and chew gum on this one. That's all I'm going to say. No, you got anything on that, Sean, or?
No, that's about it.
All right. I just wanted to get that out of my system.
Fuck Bezos.
Yeah.
Fuck Amazon.
Whatever. Exactly. All right. So we're going to take a quick break. I want to remind you, if you can, become a member of Raging Chicken Press. Go to patreon.com/RC Press today. Become as members for as little as $5 a month, and you can support progressive, pull-no-punches, in-your-face journalism, right, in-your-face podcasting right here in Pennsylvania. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be right back after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1974. That was the day that a 3-man American astronaut crew returned to Earth from an 84-day mission at the Skylab. They were the first crew to spend so long in low Earth orbit up until that time. The crew also returned with a different kind of first. They had launched the first space strike in history. The all-rookie crew was scheduled for an arduous work schedule at the space station. When one member fell ill, they began to fall behind schedule on their long list of tasks. From the ground, NASA Mission Control urged them to catch up by working through meals and scheduled rest times. Tensions mounted as the 3 men were monitored at every moment. The commander of the trip tried to explain the crew's exhaustion, saying, "On the ground, I don't think we would be expected to work 16 hours a day for 85 days. And so I really don't see why we should even try to do it up here." 6 weeks into the trip, the Skylab 4 crew had had enough. They turned off the communication radio connecting them to Earth. They took an unscheduled day off. When the communication link came back on, the commander issued the group's demands, saying, "We need more time to rest. We need a schedule that's not so packed. We don't want to exercise after a meal. We need to get things under control." NASA agreed to stop pushing so hard. The first space strike was over, and the mission went forward on better terms.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press, here with Sean Kitchen, right? Our muckraker in chief out there in Harrisburg. And Sean, man, it was like, you know, Governor Wolf, man, same night as the state of, same day as the State of the Union, right? He's out there with budget address and he announced like Green New Deal for Pennsylvania, right?
No.
Oh. Oh, wasn't it?
No, no.
I mean, it, like with his like 60%, 70% mandate, right, to govern here moving forward and a kind of progressive lieutenant governor being elected, he didn't kind of stake out kind of like really innovative progressive grounds in his budgeting?
No.
Huh.
It was a no-frills budget with some tax cuts, trying to go after the corporate tax gains, capital gains tax.
That's what we need.
Yes, yes. But I think he wants to like push for more Marcellus Shale tax and then a minimum wage hike. So,
oh, good. So we're going to go to what, $15, $18 an hour?
12.
Oh, 12.
But 15 by 2024.
Oh, by 2024.
Yes.
That's like, that's a while, that's a ways away, Sean.
No comment. But there's been a lot of talk in Harrisburg the past week, 2 weeks, about the minimum wage, raising the wage and stuff like that. $12 an hour is where the compromise is at. And, you know, waiting to get up to 15 by 2024 is the compromise. You know, we had a really interesting House Labor and Industry Committee meeting on Wednesday. And, you know, Dems gonna be Dems. Pat Harkins said afterwards that he wants to try to find a less ambitious plan to raise the minimum wage. And, you know, so maybe instead of like $7.25 an hour, we can go to Scott Wagner's plan, which is going to be like $8.50 an hour. I don't know. But that's not a compromise. Right. So like the whole thing about like compromises, like if you're going to include capital gains tax cuts and other tax cuts that disproportionately benefit the rich, raising the minimum wage to like $12 or $15 an hour and making sure people get out of poverty is not like a compromise. Exactly. That's just called being bent over the barrel.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I mean, that's what that is. Like, how come we have to like compromise? How come we have to use compromise, the word compromise, when it only benefits, like incrementally benefits poor people? Like, and then disproportionately benefits the rich.
Yeah, I mean, it's astounding to me. It really is. It really is. This is not. This is the fact that Harkins is actually still and the Democratic Party in the state is still locked into that mentality is just like just so exhausting.
And the one thing that's like, so Galloway didn't get back on the House Labor and Industry because some of the stuff he said. That pissed off labor. And now, like, the very first committee hearing, Harkins goes out afterwards and tells a reporter that maybe we could find middle ground between a less ambitious plan and middle ground between Wolf and between Wolf's plan and the right wing, who literally brought in two economists to testify that there should be no minimum wage. Like, well, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know about you, but, like, have you ever, like, walked into a union negotiation – Just giving concessions right away.
Well, that's the important way. You learn this, Sean. You see, you still don't understand this well enough. See, when you go into negotiations, right, it's kind of like you're doing some mental jiu-jitsu. The first thing that you do in your negotiations is that you tell the other side that you're going to give them half of what they want just to start. And then magic happens and you get a good contract. You see? Of course not. That's insane. That's insane. You never start negotiations at the like what you imagine the other side will compromise on. That's fucking ridiculous. That's like 101.
Yes.
Oh my God.
So, yeah, that's where we're at.
Well, look what they're doing. You know, we talk about the Overton window on this before, right? About kind of setting the stage. Look, you've got the fact that you've got these, you know, the Commonwealth Foundation kind of funded people, associated folks, and coming in there, they're sending them up there to kind of testify with labor and industry about how the minimum wage should be zero, right? It's like it doesn't matter if these people are their faculties or not, huh?
They dug so far deep. They drug out the Thomas Sowell report from like 2012, trying to like say that like minimum wage laws are racist. Like, and the one thing I wish I would have seen pushback on, like, right to work laws are fucking racist laws.
Right.
These are like embraced by white supremacists and the Klan and stuff like this.
Of course they are.
And like, you're going to say that like keeping minorities, keeping home healthcare workers, teachers, preschool teachers, like down into the bottom, like we'll do this. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There was one good thing in Wolf's budget that he did propose. He proposed that a minimum teacher salary should be $45,000 a year. And there are still parts in the state that will be getting an extra like $800,000 a year because teacher salaries are that low, like in parts of the state. I mean, so that's good. Like, I mean, that's an actual like really like, hey, we should be raising the floor from like $18,000 a year minimum teacher salary up to $44,000, $45,000. So,
yeah, and that's huge. And you could imagine, like, that's the one thing that you could imagine having.
Like there are teachers in really rural parts of the state that are making below $45,000 a year.
Right. And you could imagine that can have a really serious and significant impact on communities.
Yes.
Right. I mean, you're taking
bringing in an extra like $600,000-$700,000 into school districts, single school districts and stuff like that. Like, that's important because that money is then going to get spent in those communities and it's going to raise everyone else up with them.
Yep. Absolutely.
What's that? A rising tide lifts all boats.
Lifts all boats. There you go, yep. Man. And it's a good thing that we're not cutting our carbon emissions so the tide can rise faster than usual.
Yeah.
It's a good thing that we're all going into natural gas here in the state too as well, right? And that we're kind of like got our heads in the sands on climate change in Pennsylvania since we're the third largest producers of carbon emissions in the country. But yeah, so we're getting behind all that tide lifting all boats. Sorry. Sorry to go off on that little tangent there, Sean.
No problem.
Oh, man. So, I mean, we'll see. We'll see what goes on. So I guess we should talk about Senator Scumbag for a little bit.
Dan Leach?
Yeah, that would be the one. Right? Well,
I don't want to get a defamation slap suit thrown at me. So, I mean, we got to watch what we say here. We might get sued.
Yeah, well, because that's exactly what he's doing right now. He is suing three Me Too activists for bringing his allegations to light.
And it took two weeks for Senator Jay Costa to take Dalen Leach off of the Senate Judiciary Committee as leader, co-leader.
Yeah. Just,
I mean, like...
It was because of the paperwork, Sean. He just had some paperwork to do and take some time.
Or that the caucus might be like in shreds at the moment. But
yeah, how about that?
Not really going into detail on that, but it is like an absolute shit show with this. I mean, this is fucking common sense. Strip the guy of his committee membership, and the more he digs deeper, strip him of his staff.
Yep.
You know, there's one person in that building that can make his life living hell, and that's Jay Costa.
Yep.
Costa has shown not to really do that.
And look, even like at the bare minimum, when it comes to what Costa could do, Right. And I think this is like, if he wants to play like, you know, I want to be fair, blah, blah. He wants to do all that, blah, blah, blah stuff. At the very baseline, right, as the leader of the Democratic Party, you, like in this case, you basically you come forward and you say, okay, look, we're gonna take him off these committees and things like now because he's right now,
and this is,
until this is all sorted out, this has become way too much of a distraction to be able to get the work and focus on what we've done. That he could actually use that language. Right. To keep his like whatever kind of his bullshit sense of kind of I don't even know what. Right. He could say that to get rid of Dale and Leach. Right. And get to sideline Dale and Leach. Right. And that would be kind of like I think he's not going to get a lot of pushback, even members in his party and things like this. The only one that's going to be pissed off by that is going to be Dale and Leach. Right. I mean, if he's not going to come out and basically saying we will not tolerate this in our party, burnt, then at the very least, he can kind of like pretend that this is about a technical issue.
Yeah, I mean, DePasquale came out calling for resign. You know, whatchamacallit, same with Fetterman. And the reason why we are here, it took the escalation of Kara Taylor to go into the Capitol on her own and distribute a like police report to all 50 Senate offices explaining what Dale Leach did to her, you know, through her allegations. And then it took that like to bubble up for about a week and a half. And then it took Katie Muth, newly state senator Katie Muth, to file a like petition to have him expelled from the Senate in order for this to come to this point. When right. Really, like, this should have happened in December 2017 when 8 women and 13 others credibly came forward and explained their stories about Dale Leach and working with him in his offices as campaign staff and stuff like that. Like, this should have happened back in December 2017. He shouldn't have been able to like be on a judiciary committee as, you know, co-chair talking about this stuff.
Right.
You know, handling this stuff. It took for this to come forward, and it took for Katie, like if Katie Muth didn't like go in and you know, file that expulsion petition, like I don't think that this would have this would have happened.
Right. Right,
which is pretty fucking pathetic.
No, which is exactly why also with Dale and Leach was kind of attacking Katie Muth so much, right? Because he knew full well, and she like you know like she's no joke.
Yeah, no, she's not, and she ain't going anywhere either.
Nope. I think she's only. I mean, as a matter of fact, I think she's only going to kind of widen her baseline of support.
And she, I have to tell you one thing: she has a lot of support within the Senate staff caucus. That's all I could say. But like a lot of people see her as a rock star and they love her within the caucus staff and within the Capitol. So.
There you go. There you go, man. Well, anything else kind of cool happen around the state, Sean?
KP Summit was last week.
Yeah. Oh, we got. Yeah. This was the lead up we had before. Yeah. So walk us through, because I mean, I like this is the first one that I've missed in years. They moved it out to Pittsburgh this year. And I, unlike Sean, I love Pittsburgh. It's been a long time since I spent any time in Pittsburgh. I really would have liked to gone, but I just couldn't pull it off. I mean, given my kind of like my wife's schedule, things going on with my kids and things like this, it was way, way, way too much for me to deal with, especially it was the beginning of the semester. So just we couldn't pull it off. Give us a little picture. Give us a window into it.
I think it was really good. It was different. So instead of like being like this really broad, you know, like in Harrisburg, like 800 to 1,000 people used to show up in the Hilton. And it was like, I think it was like $60-$70 or $100 a person at that point. Mm-hmm. To do that, they moved out to Pittsburgh. They had it at the IBW Hall out there. And it was like $35 a person for registration. There's about 300 people who showed up, but it was more activist driven than like your general, like older audience who showed up the ones prior with like the workshops and everything. This is more younger activist operatives and some of the, like it was a fairly more mixed crowd age wise than like predominantly like older people who would show up this year's past.
Well, I imagine too as well. I was really curious about how much. I mean, Pittsburgh has been one of the hotspots, right, around the state for like DSA, right, for kind of millennial activism, right, to kind of cross class, cross race coalition stuff like that in political. How much did you see that at the summit?
I think a lot of it. So I went to a couple of really good ones. First one, sessions, trainings. The first one I went to was with Lev Hirschhorn, who is one of the organizers with Reclaim Philly. Mm-hmm. And so Reclaim Philly is a group that started after the primary, 2016 primary. There was a bunch of organizing going on from the Bernie staff in Philadelphia. And they said, we don't want this work to go away. So a bunch of people from the Bernie field team in Philadelphia started this group called Reclaim Philadelphia. They pushed Larry Krasner to run and won. They're pushing other candidates to run and win. They're taking over the ward systems in Philadelphia, which is really important to Philadelphia party politics. They're instead of like going after the machine, which is now under federal indictment, they are building their own machine. And so the training was actually pretty good. It was about power, building power. And so we went through a couple of like exercises. One, Lev like act like as a tyrant. You had to draw your ideal communities on a thing, and he would just go in and draw a call plan or rip it up. And he's like, why didn't anyone respond to me? Right. And he's like, because we put your trust in you, blah, blah, blah. He's like, yeah, I'm the typical politician. I'm coming in and wrecking your communities. Like, and no one stood up. And so the next exercise in it, he put five things on a board on the wall. Mm-hmm. So you have different personality traits: hide in the weeds, chaos creator, lone wolf, blissful idiot, like blissfully stupid and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And you had to like pick which these like represent yourself. And explain why. And so I picked the chaos creator because I think I like causing chaos. It's sort of like what I do and get shot and poured out of. But like,
no, that's so kind of all, that's my happy place too. So,
so we're all talking about this as if these are great personality traits. Mm-hmm. And so like we're writing these down with our groups and we break out, we sit back down into our seats afterwards. And about halfway through it dawns on me, no, these are actually like horrible, destructive personality traits that are stopping people from actually building power. And I had to like explain that and stuff like that. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yep.
And so it's like more of a sense of helping building power and attaining it and stuff like that. That was really good. Rafael Diaz, he gave a really good presentation on class and race and how racism and classism are the same thing, which is really good. There are also some people with disabilities in the room. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it made him actually like look to relate how classism, racism, and ableism are all related, because people with disabilities are still treated like in that same realm of, you know, minorities and other groups and are still preyed upon.
Yep.
So that was something that was really good. And then I went to one with John Smucker talking about Lancaster Stands Up and how they organize and stuff like that, and awesome, messaging and stuff like that. So that was great.
That's freaking awesome. I'm really bummed I missed it, to be honest with you. I was really...
It was a lot more activist and organizer-driven this year.
Yeah, yeah. I hope this is the direction moving forward. I would love to see, you know, I would love to see this kind of move around the state a little bit. You know, if I had my druthers, as I'll tell you, is like, whatever, you're going to roll your eyes at me. But, you know, this is a... They should really consider having a one of these Keystone Progress summits in the Lehigh Valley.
And yeah, I don't care. I think it's good.
Yeah, I just like, I'm always constantly plugging the Lehigh Valley. I really think that's where that could really serve as a boost, because if you look at what the organizing that's been going on in Lehigh Valley around immigrant rights, right, about kind of like living wage stuff, around kind of like redevelopment issues and gentrification. I mean, at the same time, you've got, you know, the scandals that went through the kind of local government around, you know, corruption and everything like this. And it's so ready for it. Right. And then you got Bethlehem, like it's right next door. Easton, there's all sorts of amazing stuff that's going on. I mean, this is. I'm fingers crossed, because I'd love to see that kind of model kind of move around the state. And, you know, kudos to Dan Dubay and the whole folks of Keystone Progress in moving this in this direction. I like that move.
Oh, also.
Yeah.
Driving back from Pittsburgh Sunday morning, there are still a couple of Scott Wagner billboards up on the fucking turnpike.
still running.
So, like, he put these billboards up in the spot where, like, there's just no density of people to buy them. So instead of having a blank billboard, I guess the company is just keeping the billboards up, the advertisements up. Oh, so it's like the middle of February, and there are still Scott Wagner for governor billboards up.
Oh, my God. Oh, boy. Pepsi.
Life is real. Ask me anything.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Oh, man. Oh, man. All right. Anything else going around the state, man?
No, I think that's it.
I should mention there, too, as well. I'm pretty excited that next weekend at Kutztown, we're having a small group kind of workshop out there, too, as well. We got some folks from Labor Notes coming into town. And speaking of building power, we're going to be talking about doing exactly that. Right. So we've got some union activists who are basically saying that we're going to kind of start looking at kind of building stuff from the ground up. So that's I'm really excited about that. Like, kudos to Mike Gambone for getting that all kind of organized and stuff. I'm really excited about it. Got some people from Labor Notes who've got, you know, have just been fantastic in terms of helping kind of think about setting up a kind of workshop and kind of setting up and building power. And kudos to the other faculty members from different universities who will be traveling out to Kutztown University to learn, basically, and join together with brothers and sisters to think about building power. So I'll keep you updated on that one kind of after that happens. So anyways, all right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We will be back shortly to get into today's last call. All right? We'll be back right after this for the last call. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull-no-punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. It's the last call. Probably have a short last call today, folks, in part because, one, I did not watch the new episode of Star Trek last night because I got too tired, and so I went to sleep. So I was actually going to watch it today. I was actually when Sean basically we thought that we had to have some rescheduling stuff so that we're going to have to do the podcast a little bit later in the day. So I said, you know, last night I was like, I'm not going to watch it. I'll wake up tomorrow morning. I had to do a bunch of stuff around the house. Right. And I said, you know what? I got to have breakfast. I'll sit down and I will kind of watch a part of the Star Trek Discovery, the latest episode. And so I can talk about the podcast today. But of course, I saw Sean's message. Say no, actually we can actually do it the regular time, so didn't watch it, so I don't have that. Cool stuff going on in space news, that but it gets a little bit too in the weeds and I don't have it for it, so I'm just going to talk about a little bit of beer today. So cool thing going up at Free Will this week is pre-Valentine beer pairing with Trey locally sourced. That's going to be on Wednesday, February 13th at the Perksy Brewery. The cool thing is it's going to be a 5-course beer and food pairing. And it's going to be in the brewery's sour cellar, right? My wife got me a few years back. They had an event that they had some kind of craft cheese producers kind of in the area that they came and did a cheese and beer pairing. And we went down there and had, like, you know, they had a setup right again in the sour cellar. It was freaking great. right? So you got down there, you kind of have, you sit down and you have a, it was like, you know, she got a free, I think it was my birthday or maybe it was a Valentine's thing. I'm not sure. But, you know, you sit down, you kind of like have some good food. You get to sample the different beers and they take you around the cellar and they kind of give you a little tour of the brewery. It's kind of a cool event, right? If you're looking for something to do, it does come in. I'll warn you ahead of time. This one, the price tag is around $65 a person. But it comes with like all the beer and the food that they're going to have for the night. So if you're looking for something special to do, that's going to be Wednesday night, the day before Valentine's Day, and the Perksy Brewery. We got a link. We got a link in the show notes today to check that out. And then tomorrow, Free Will is releasing the Orange Colored Malcontent Double IPA with Cara oranges and milk sugar. And the last time that this got released, did I give you some of that or no?
No.
No, that was great. I was so surprised at that one. It was just like super. Those Cara oranges, just the oranginess of it just kind of really comes through in a really smooth and way without it being kind of overly sweet. So it was fantastic. And that gave it, you know, the milk sugars and stuff, and it gives it this nice little cloudiness to it. It was so good. They redesigned the can. I'm just really curious about this. I was digging around a little bit this morning just to kind of poke around. I was just kind of curious about this. The can has been redesigned, right? And it looks really cool, so don't get me wrong.
I'm not Donald Trump.
What's that?
You look like Donald Trump?
No. See, here's the thing, right? And I don't know what's. I don't know if it has anything to do with it or not, but when the orange-colored malcontent came out there, it had this kind of, like, person screaming on it, like, you know. And it seemed to me that there was at least a subtle call to kind of like a subtle kind of critique of Trump or reference to Trump as the orange colored malcontent, right? I wasn't exactly sure, didn't give it a whole lot of thought. But this redesign of this is, it's all this kind of geometric pattern, stuff like that. It's really cool can, real cool design. But there's part of me that's got to wonder, right? Was there any, because like, look, Perkasy is not exactly in the middle of a hotbed of progressive activism around here. We got it's pretty thick with Trumpsters. So I'm wondering if they got any pushback and if that's what we're going to see. So I'm just going to play around with that a little bit. But in the meantime, if you want to go pick it up, it'll be available tomorrow, Saturday at the brewery, at both locations, actually. And so I'll pick up some cans. So, that's what I got. So, yeah. Oh, and I have to say, I had last night for the first time in a while, because I've been like tired. I've had this awful headache. For the first time in a while, I had a bottle of the Ella, right, that I had left over last night.
Oh, boy. And
what's that?
I said, oh, boy.
Yeah, it was over a period of time. It's part of the reasons I was tired and ready to go to bed last night. it was just super, super good. So anyways. Yeah, Sean, what you got?
Well, I mean, I went to the Hop. So while I was out in Pittsburgh, went to the Hofbrauhaus.
The Hofbrauhaus. Nice.
Yes.
There you go, man. Not even Oktoberfest, and there you were.
Yeah, I know. there was a fundraiser that we sort of crashed, me, James, and Melissa Byrne. So we just, like, walked right into it and didn't pay. And, you know, there was free beer and free food. And it was really good.
Let's say, so there's not a whole lot bad about that, is there? Free beer, free food?
No. So at the end of the night, they came around, like, to our table and said, hey, there's, like, $400 left on the tab. Do you guys want any more beer?
I don't know. Sure, okay.
You don't have to bend my arm on it.
Are you serious?
Yeah. But the Hofbrauhaus was okay. I mean, it's a touristy trap.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in that section of Pittsburgh. Where we were at was very touristy, very a lot of chain foods and stuff like that, and a lot of corporate parks.
Yeah.
Like our hotel was right next to the American Eagle corporate park. So just to give you what it's like down there. But one thing I'm really surprised, they have a 5G network out there in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember that. Yeah. Does it make a difference?
Oh, it's very fast.
Is it was the infrastructure built by the Chinese? That's like Donald Trump was going after China for that. I don't know if you followed any of that kind of stuff. There was a big back and forth.
I didn't hear that.
But apparently China is building out its 5G network in unbelievable ways, and we have you have to be surprised by showing up in a place that has a 5G network to realize like how amazing it is.
Yeah, no, exactly right. I looked at my phone, I was like, wow, this is 5G out here, and it's just like, yeah, and I mean we're still like fucking squabbling over putting high speed internet in like rural Pennsylvania.
Yep.
Yeah. And, infrastructure is not something to be had in this country.
No, it's not. It's not. The Which is why we need the Green New Deal.
To the sun because we every would get the, year. Oh. We have more people.
Sorry, that was an accident.
Know, humans have warm bodies, so is
that was this there was some rando talking about global warming and people with warm bodies. I accidentally hit the soundboard. Sorry. Oh man, well, cool. I'm glad you got a little chance to get some free beer and free food, especially after working so hard and spending some good times out there in Pittsburgh. So cool. Well, anything else for the good of the order, Sean?
No. No, I'm good.
Yeah, me either. All I notice is that right now, I'm looking out the window and the sun came out for the first time in a while, which is pretty cool. I'm very excited about that. And big news. Well, this is big news. Nobody else will actually know this, so the project for this weekend is going to be switching around my basement. So a little kind of Raging Chicken studio is going to have a different look at it next week, Sean. So be prepared.
Nice. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. So I've been playing around. So I'll say this now for the last call stuff. So one of the things I've been messing around with, one of the things I would love to do at some point is to have some sort of – I'd have to figure out the time for this. Sunday nights always seem to stick in my head, but – to do some kind of say live hangouts for Out the Coop or for the podcast, and then maybe have some people on to chat and things like this. And part of it has always been kind of like having a space that's actually conducive, so it's not just looks like crap on on YouTube. But so if I can pull that together, it's going to depend on a couple things. If I can pull that together, I'll let people know about that. It's just kind of way of kind of, you know, bring some folks on, kind of a little bit more kind of informal chat stuff, and where we can actually take, people can join in and kind of like pose their questions, have things to say, and we can have a discussion. So I might be the kind of thing that we'll roll that out first to members. And to see how that works, and then go from there. So, but I'll keep you posted on that. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
One thing that was really cool when we were out the first night at the Progress Summit, we went to this place called Spirit in Lawrenceville, the sort of like the hip area of Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And upstairs they had like a bunch of things on the wall, like favorite podcasts and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. By the time I got there, it said favorite local podcast, Out the Coup, Raging Chicken Press.
No way.
Yes.
No way.
Yeah. Shanna Danielson beat me to it. Putting it up there. And I got a lot of likes from people. So
awesome. Awesome. Yes. Awesome. Awesome. Oh, did you see her out there?
Yes.
She was there. Yep. Oh, awesome. She's one of the people on my list of that I kind of got to get in touch with, and she's one of the people actually. I'll say it now, is that I'd love to have her on as kind of do one of those either like an episode of Out the Coop podcast or as kind of doing one of the kind of like launches out of kind of discussions about running, because I'm really curious, because she ran a really really good campaign, right? In an area of the state where her chances of actually winning that campaign were kind of slim to none, especially as a, you know, with building from the ground up on there. But she actually had, man, she ran a great campaign and she got some really good traction in that race. And so I was, as a first time candidate, who's like someone who basically came up and said, I'm going to step up and I'm going to do this. And I'd just be really interested in having that conversation with her about her experiences and stuff. So that'll coming up. So, hey, Shanna, I'll get around to it. I swear to God, I'm trying to straighten out. Like, so I should say, here's my other little bit of news. Like, so I've been mentioning this on the podcast now, is that, yes, it did come out. So I had my doctor's appointment too as well. And sure enough, as it was, I did have sleep apnea and do have sleep apnea. So I'm hopefully that when they kind of got the treatment for it, I got to put on that freaking Darth Vader's mask at nighttime and stuff. It'll clear my head a little bit, because I'll tell you, it's been. I said to Sean before we went on the show today, it's been for a long time now. It's got about 8 months, it seems. I have not been able to think. It's just only gotten worse over the past, especially this last semester. I was just having really trouble just thinking. And it was reminding me about when our first kid was born, my son, Rowan. He, for the first 9 months, literally, this is not an exaggeration, for the first 9 months, he rarely, if ever, slept for more than about an hour and a half at a time. And my wife and I had decided that, we're going to get up together in the middle of the night, when he needs to be fed and changed and stuff like this, and we want to do this stuff together. And part of just lack of experience, we didn't realize that, okay, that what that basically meant for us is that both of us were up for like every hour and a half all the time. And just we were exhausted. So that was the first time I had ever been in my life had been so exhausted for a prolonged period of time that actually was I was, you know, it could feel what the effects are that has both on your body, but also in your brain. And then that's what this has felt like. I mean, not as extreme as that, but it's been like that. So hopefully, you know, went had the doctor's appointment this week and said, yeah, sure enough, this is what you got. The sleep test come back. And so hopefully I'm going to be able to straighten some of this stuff out because, people who've been writing, have been participating with Raging Chicken have know this. Sean knows this certainly, right, that I've just been, you know, Seth Goldstein, you know, if he's out there listening today too as well. It's like, you know, so, you know, been watching this gradual kind of like, you know, like I've been dropping the ball on just kind of baseline stuff and haven't been able to pay attention with getting stuff updated in the time. And so hopefully they're going to be able to get some of that straightened up. So, you know, this is where I appreciate for people who have already been stuck with us. Because it's been, for me, it's just been kind of one of these things that's just been prolonged and I care about this so much and I love what we do with Raging Chicken. I just like have not been able to kind of, put the same kind of effort that into, you know, just the baseline stuff of kind of keeping everything updated, keep stuff for me writing and publishing stuff. So hopefully we're going to turn a corner and I've got some new interest in kind of having new writers out there. I'll put this call out of there again. I should have done this at the top of the show, but there are people interested in writing, please do get in touch with me at ragingchickenpress@gmail.com. And because we want to kind of bring on some new writers and start to kind of move this in the next direction. So we shall see. So anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. I appreciate you sticking with us. We're going to kind of get out of here for the day, maybe enjoy a little bit of that sun, and we'll see you next week. Anything else for the good of the order, Sean?
No, nothing else.
All right, man. Well, hey, have yourself an awesome weekend.
I will.
All right. So this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Thanks for hanging out with us. We'll talk to you next week.
See ya!
No justice and there is no combating climate change without addressing what has happened to indigenous communities. That means that there is no fixing our economy without addressing the racial wealth gap. That means that we are not going to transition to renewable energies without also transitioning frontline communities and coal communities into economic opportunity as well. That is what this is about. It is comprehensive. It is thoughtful, it is compassionate, and it is extremely economically strategic as well. Today is also the day that we choose to assert ourselves as a global leader in transitioning to 100% renewable energy and charting that path.